Hello and welcome. I'm Brad Bloom, publisher of Faith and Fitness Magazine, and I'm pleased you've chosen to turn to us to build physical and spiritual strength. My guest is Dr. William Cook. He's a fellow of the American Academy of Family Medicine and the American Society of Addiction Medicine, specializing in family medicine, addiction medicine, and HIV medicine. He's the author of a brand new book out called Canary in the Coal Mine. And there's a lot more that I can share about him, but let's go ahead and get this started. Dr. Cook, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for inviting me.
Go ahead and share with me a little bit about just being there in Indiana and in Austin and the hometown where you have.
Sure. Yeah, I was born and raised in southern Indiana and knew at a fairly young age, 15, that I was feeling called into basically the ministry, but I wasn't sure what that would look like. And I quickly settled on medicine. I know that's kind of an odd ministry, so to speak, but I felt that God could use me in an area that didn't have medical access to bring hope and opportunity and wellness to people's lives who hadn't had access to that. So when I graduated from medical school, I looked around trying to find an area that didn't have a doctor, that had you know, people in need of medical services, of that access to hope and opportunity so that they could live more fulfilled lives. I had this verse in mind that Christ came, that people would have life more abundantly. And as a Christian, I felt like it was one of my jobs was to bring that access to other people so that they could live life more abundantly. So that was my verse that I held on to when I first started my practice. Austin, Indiana is in southern Indiana. It's about 36 miles north of Louisville, Kentucky, about 80 miles south of Indianapolis. It's an area that, like a lot of other places in the Midwest, Appalachia, the Rust Belt, has suffered from deindustrialization, resulting in a lot of poverty and chronic toxic stress and generational poverty. So when I opened my practice there, it was the first time there was an established medical practice in the town since the mid-1970s. This was in 2004, so basically an entire generation of people had grown up without, you know, access to medicine there in their hometown.
Many of us have read the Robert Frost poem, The Road Not Taken, and the book, The Road Less Traveled, by Dr. M. Scott Peck. It has been years since you started your medical practice in Austin, Indiana. Looking back, how did your choice to do that, or better said, your obedience to the calling God put on your life, forever shape the future?
So my choice to go to Austin really has changed my life. It's changed who I am. When I first opened my practice there, I wasn't expecting to see the level of suffering that I witnessed in the lives of my patients. I didn't realize that there was that much suffering occurring right in the middle of the wealthiest nation on earth, a Christian nation where we reach out to each other and we help our neighbors. So it really surprised me that there was that much suffering, the people struggling with a meal, you know, during the day or where they were going to sleep that night. Women really needing to make some really horrible choices to be able to feed their children or clothe them. And so it really challenged my worldview that if you just tried hard enough, that you would be able to succeed in acquiring health, prosperity, and wellness. And when I first opened my practice, I thought that was my challenge, would be to really help people try harder, to have some of the skills and knowledge that they may need to live healthier and to become, you know, more prosperous in their life, live more abundantly in their lives. But what I discovered by listening to the stories of my patients, experiencing what it was like to grow up in a place like Austin was that there are circumstances outside of people's control. And some of those circumstances are so overwhelming that no matter how hard they tried, they wouldn't be able to overcome them. And so I had to reorient how I thought of things there, that maybe sometimes, you know, people are trying really hard, but still having bad outcomes in their lives. And so those bad outcomes weren't a result of bad choices necessarily, but overwhelming, oppressive circumstances that were outside of their control. So I shifted to try to figure out how to bring resources and opportunity to people that didn't have that before, and then trying to figure out ways to allow people to feel safe, because without the ability to feel safe and secure and like they belonged, there's really no way to have a stable foundation to stand on to be able to make those changes in their lives. The other thing that I had to come to grips with was that I wasn't going there to save this town. You know, at 15, I was called by God to be a physician, to go somewhere and you know, help people. And there was this subtle thing inside of me that had been growing along with my effort to become, you know, a physician, to do God's work, you know, in a town like Austin. There was a thing kind of growing inside of me that, you know, I would be the reason things changed there. I didn't realize it was there until, you know, I was coming up with all of these obstacles in the way of the work that I was trying to do. It was a private practice. We were in a very poor area. I had two staff at the time. And honestly, it was really hard to just keep the doors open. And everything that I was trying to do was getting, you know, very little results back. So again, you know, I was trying really hard, but not seeing a lot of results, just like my patients were experiencing in their lives. And then in 2008, the Great Recession hit, and it just devastated Austin, and a lot of people went from not doing well to just suffering so much, not having a home anymore, losing their jobs, and drugs, you know, really set in a very strong way. A lot of people who may have gotten away from drugs and into recovery relapsed. It was a devastating time, and so that was 4 years into my practice there. I didn't think that I would be able to continue doing that work. It was too hard. I wasn't getting anywhere. In fact, things had gotten a lot worse through the Great Recession. And it was, you know, financially difficult to even keep the practice open. And so I really contemplated leaving Austin and not continuing my work there. And in the process, you know, basically got as far away from Austin as I could by joining a mission trip to the Amazon. And so I was on the back of this medical boat, you know, traveling down the Amazon River, and we'd stop at different villages. We'd go in and meet them and have dinner with them, play soccer sometimes with the entire village. You'd have boys and girls, men and women, all kind of, you know, running around a soccer field together, playing together. And it was this really strong sense of community that we could just melt into each other and be a part of each other's lives and just help each other. The dinners were this community effort. And what we were doing there, you know, felt like it was part of the community. And I remember being on the boat, and we were traveling down this river, and there's this point when two rivers come together. There's this really dark river, and then this lighter river, and the colors of the water are very distinct. And those two rivers come together at this place called the Meeting of the Waters. And you can see this demarcation very clearly. And as those two rivers come together, they merge and their waters combine, and then they just slowly dissipate into one river. And that's the origin of the Amazon River, where those rivers come together. And all of this, you know, kind of was weighing on my heart, and I'm thinking through, you know, these rivers giving up their identities to become the greatest river in the world. These villages just kind of living together and being a part of each other's lives. And I was sitting on the back of this boat in the middle of the night, just pitch black. You know, there's no city lights or anything out in the middle of the Amazon. So just pitch black and all these stars. And just one shooting star after another just started going across the night sky. And I just opened myself up to God. And I didn't have any words to pray. I had run out of words. And I didn't have anything else that I was really hoping for or wishing for. I just didn't know what the next steps were for me. I was at the end of my line. And
at this point, by the way, had you decided, okay, I'm giving up this practice in Austin, or you were wrestling with what to do with it?
Yeah, I was in between that. I was like, I can't do this anymore. I think I'm just going to give up the practice in Austin, but I didn't know what the next steps were, basically. And so I was just like empty. I was completely empty. I'd poured out everything I had into the work, and the Great Recession hit, and it didn't accomplish anything. And I just felt like I had, you know, spent 4 years of my life trying to accomplish something that ended in total devastation. And so I felt like a failure. I felt like my life's work was meaningless, and that maybe I had misheard what God was asking me to do. And so, yeah, I'm just kind of sitting there on the back of this boat, and I'm empty. I don't have anything left in me to say, to think, to want, and I'm just listening, you know, to God. And this presence was there. And it basically challenged me in that moment to reevaluate that the reason I went there wasn't for me to do some great work. It was for the people of Austin to, you know, rise up and to claim their home and to work, you know, allow God to work through all of that. And so I wasn't the story, and I had misguidedly place the emphasis on me and my story, you know, because we all see life through our own lens, our own eyes, our own stories. I had been living that, and I needed to give up my identity to Austin, just like the rivers gave up their identities, like the people in the communities just kind of, you know, chipping in and helping out. The story wasn't going to be my story. It was going to be the story of Austin. And so I needed to give up my story to Austin and go back with a different mentality that I wasn't there to save the town. I was there to just love people, to be a part of what was going on, to see needs, respond to those needs, and be a part of things, not try to fix things. And so when I came back, I had that totally different perspective. And it allowed me to continue to work there in Austin and really start helping a lot of people and develop some resources there in the town that the people of Austin could help each other.
Sure.
And be a part of my practice and be a part of the community. And we all are working together to accomplish something great.
That is really just leading right into this next question that I have. And I think, you know, as people live their lives in so many different ways, and particularly for our audience who does fitness, to get this whole mentality of there's a bigger picture here. This is more than just me. This is more than the agenda that I initially envisioned is really powerful. I want to ask you, what have you learned about listening to God? How does God use you to innovate in ways that others can't even see? And what are the characteristics of God-driven progress that you have discovered?
Yeah, so personally, my relationship with God has evolved through my life from basically coming to Him with my perspective, my ideas of what I want to accomplish, and kind of fitting Him into those expectations, and learning to just give that up and really come to God empty, you know, having no expectations, no real ask of God, but just, you know, what am I to do? Just to be surrendered to Him, and open to the possibilities of really whatever, wherever He's, you know, guiding me, and that He loves people, and He wants us to love people, and He speaks to us oftentimes through the lives of other people. And if we're not listening in those moments, we miss it completely. And so I've found it very valuable to just set my own story aside and enter into the story of my patients and the people around me, and just try to understand what it is to be them, to live the existence that they've lived, and to try to help find resources and tools and stuff to invest in people, to allow them to be able to live that more full, abundant life that allows them to be healthy and well and accomplish the purpose that they're here on earth to accomplish as well. I think of the woman at the well. You know, Jesus went out of His way. He didn't have to go through Samaria, but he went there on purpose, and he met her there. And
yeah.
He didn't tell her, you know, who He was necessarily. He told her who she was, right? He knew her and allowed her to know that He knew her. And that understanding really opened her heart and allowed Him to work, you know, through her life more than if He just had come, you know, here are the answers, here's how you do things, you follow this plan and you get these results.
Sure,
that doesn't work for everybody. Yeah, he understood who she was and then was able, I think when we do that, when we allow ourselves to do that, then we can help people develop the plan for their life instead of us telling them the plan for their life.
Yeah, I want to dig into what you're saying there, both from just an everyday person that, you know, is listening to this conversation today, and also the fitness professionals, the gym owners, the people that have a business that they're doing. And a lot of them, as they're listening to this, might say, well, that's a nice idea, Dr. Cook, but you know, I've got a business to run. I've got to make this thing successful. I've got to direct it a bit more. For both of those audiences, for everybody, how do we mature beyond a godless or sinful human nature of choosing to be socially disengaged and allow God to strengthen who we are, whether that be a neighbor, friend, colleague, family member, or professional? How do we pursue a capacity to listen, a commitment to care, and have a heart of compassion to nurture personalized relationships?
Yeah, it's something that I've struggled with, you know, through my career. When I first became a physician, I, you know, felt like I had been trained to know the answers, and my job was to give those answers to people. But what I've discovered is when I do that, I'm missing the whole other side of the equation. There's somebody with needs that are going unmet. And unless I pause and listen to understand those needs, my plan may be totally missing what they need. And although it may be a great plan, it may be evidence-based and it works for, you know, 90% of people, maybe. But this one individual that I'm working with, maybe their needs are something different. And unless I stop and listen to hear those needs, I'm not able to respond to those needs in a way that honors that person and allows them to feel heard, to feel safe, and then be willing, you know, to engage in whatever, you know, plan we come up with together. And I think it has to be a relationship. We have to listen and respond to their needs, because there's an agenda that they have coming to us and an agenda we have coming to them. And if we just press our agenda on other people, a lot of them are just going to walk away. But if we listen and find out their agenda and then address their agenda, but then also line that up with all the great training that we may have, the knowledge that we may have, and present that to them as well. I've come to think of myself more as a resource than someone that fixes things. So people come to me with needs, and I listen to those needs and then help them find the resources they need in order for them to make the choices in their lives that are going to come with the greatest impact in their lives. And I think that translates into fitness, you know, very well. There's a lot of great evidence-based information that's out there, from nutrition to exercise routines to the way to strength train. But if somebody comes to us and we don't listen first and find out that, you know, they don't want to build muscle, they want to, you know, lose weight or train for a marathon or whatever that might be. They just want to feel better, or what their life is like. You know, they moved into a home that has a certain number of stairs, and their only goal is to be able to, you know, walk those stairs with groceries in their hands without feeling completely worn out. So I think, you know, stopping and listening to what their life looks like, because the purpose to become more fit is to be able to live our lives better. If there's some other purpose there, then I think we might be missing something.
Yes.
Fitness is important in my life. I've invested in a home gym, and I try to work out most days so that I can get through my long days, you know, feeling, you know, strong and energetic, be able to give myself to other people, to be able to do, you know, work for my wife when she needs me to do things, some stuff in the yard, to play with my kids, those sorts of things. I think it's really, really important to have that in our lives. But going back to your question, you know, I think, you know, listening to people to find out what they want out of what they're coming to us for is probably the most important thing. And if we miss that at the very beginning, we're probably not going to have them, you know, stick it out.
Yeah. And I mean, go on just a brief moment longer, you know, again, particularly for our business, you know, our professionals, they might say, well, that's nice. Sure. I want to listen to my clients, my customers, but I've got a business to do. I've got to make this make money. It's got to be successful. I've got to deliver what I know I've got to deliver. How do you navigate to make this a business that truly is not only listening to clients, but listening to God?
I've found that if you honor people and connect with people and allow them to feel safe and heard and cared for, that's your best advertisement right there. You could, you know, spend as much money as you want on a big, beautiful ad in a paper or on the radio or whatever, but it's not going to have the impact that one person could have that leaves feeling heard, safe, cared for, and that they are motivated and inspired and have the resources and tools they need to make the changes in their life that they want.
Yeah.
And they'll go out and they'll tell their friends, family, others. And that's
true.
Yeah.
Tell me, you've referred now several times in this conversation about people feeling safe. Somebody who's a strong, passionate Christian would say, well, my goodness, how can somebody not feel safe when I talk about Jesus? And yet a lot of times Christians also feel like if they broach that subject, you know, guiding people, in a way that is toward Christ, that that may be just the opposite of making them feel safe. So talk a bit about that whole safe relationship with your clients that is nonetheless intentional in pointing them towards God.
Sure. So the cross, you know, to me, it's this beautiful expression of sacrificial love. That said, I've talked to a lot of people who view the cross and its shape in a different way, more as a hammer or a weapon that's been used against them, unfortunately. And so, you know, when my logo, for example, on my practice, it has a cross in it. And there's people who have been a little put off by that, questioned whether or not I'm somebody that's safe to work with from a business standpoint or from a community standpoint because of past experiences that haven't felt safe to them. To me, you know, our calling as Christians is to follow his example and his instructions. He was asked, you know, what's the greatest commandment? And, you know, name the most important commandment. You know, he was put on the spot, and it was a dare. But he answered it through love, that we're to love God, and then we're to love our neighbors as ourselves. And when we love ourselves, we give ourselves a lot of grace. You know, if we mess up, there's reasons we messed up, and we know we're going to try harder. And part of the reasons... The part of the reason that we hate the things in our life that causes us harm is because we love ourselves. And so I think when Christ tells us to love others, the way that we love ourselves is just that we, you know, we see them and yeah, maybe they're making some really terrible choices in their life, but just like we would give ourselves the opportunity to make better choices and we hate those things because we love ourselves, we can do that for you know, our neighbors and the people that we're trying to help. I know that you're struggling with these things. Let's talk through that and figure out how we can work together, because I know you hate those things just as much as I hate those things in your life. So let's make things better. How do we overcome those? And we don't necessarily have the answers to that, but they may. You know, maybe they're in an abusive relationship at home, maybe they just went through a divorce, or maybe their child is struggling with addiction. Maybe they lost their job recently. You know, who knows what's going on there that's causing them struggle with certain things. And unless we allow them to feel safe enough to reveal those things in a vulnerable way, that they know they're not going to be ostracized for or condemned for or judged for, then if we allow that environment to exist where they feel safe enough to reveal those things, then all of a sudden the real problems that they've been struggling with in their lives comes to the surface. And, you know, we may not have the answers to those, but we can help them with some of the resources and tools and the safety they need to be able to work through that to become a healthier individual on the other side of it.
Yeah, you know, I like what you've been saying here, that you've come to realize that you're not necessarily the solution, but a resource, part of the solution.
Right.
I'd like for you to reflect on three teams that you have. One, your wife and you. Two, your staff at your practice. And three, your community network and beyond. If you could share a snapshot, a picture of you with each, what would the caption be that would help us to see the deeper understanding you have of them, the unique value they have brought to you, and the capacity to be who you are in different ways?
That's a complicated question.
Well, let's start with your wife and you.
Sure. So my wife is somebody that I value as a resource, I guess, in a way. We depend on each other, but we don't tell each other who we're supposed to be. We encourage each other to really, you know, pursue the passions that we individually have in our lives to be the best versions of ourselves that we could possibly be. And that sometimes looks different for her than I think it should. And sometimes I'm making choices that she's like, I'm not so sure about that. But we love each other through that, and we encourage each other through that, knowing that we're different people with different needs and different purposes here on Earth. That's why there's two of us. And if we're able to really feel fulfilled and purpose-driven and supported and, again, safe in our own lives, then that allows us to come together as a couple in a more abundant way, a more full way. I'm bringing things to the relationship that's a little different than she sees things, and she's bringing things to the relationship a little different than I see things. But it makes
right.
it into this more three-dimensional relationship that's fuller and greater than anything I could have in my own limited world view come up with by myself. If I had drawn it out, it would be, you know, what I want. But somehow by it also being what she wants, it's bigger and bolder and more beautiful than what I would have come up with on my own.
Sure. And then your workplace team, the staff at your practice, how do each of you all interplaying together build capacity in each other? I know in your book you talked about, you know, how you were actually on the phone with them and they were saying, hey, this is a lot worse. You know, what's happening right now, you need to focus on. You need to see what we see.
Yeah, so it's a relationship there. It's a little different. My relationship with my staff has been that I feel like, again, I'm a resource in a way to them. Each of the people on my staff, you know, they have their own passions, their own purposes that they feel passionate about. And I've always felt that, you know, if I could find people who want to do something really great in the community, and I hire them to do that, and I give them the tools and resources to do that, and then I unleash them to do that work, it's not a job for them anymore. It's really, you know, something that they wake up excited about to do. Not every single person on my staff, you know, is in that description, but we try to figure out, you know, what it is to be them, what is it that gets them up excited in the morning, and then help them have the tools and resources to do that in their job. And then,
yeah.
You know, on my side, it's, you know, this interface with the community, with God, with my calling, kind of working with them in an organic way to set the vision, the direction to the practice. And, you know, sometimes I hear what they're saying, and I'm like, you know, you all are right. We need to do things a little bit differently here. And other times, you know, they speak up and they say things, and I really feel like, you know, it's, the direction that I'm going is best for the community, and we're going to continue on that way.
Yeah.
And
so that's really
somehow,
good you make.
Thank you. Somehow along the way, there's this trust that has developed. And so when things like the HIV outbreak occurred in Austin, and I made the decision that we were going to take care of people who inject drugs and homeless people and women who resorted to sex work, they questioned it a little bit, but they followed me right along, and they were very willing to do that. And so there's this trust that's been developed too, is you know, they know that I have their best interests. I hope they know that I have their best interest in mind, and I have the interest of the community in mind, and we're trying to do something beyond our practice, my
yeah.
practice. To really be a part of a larger reason to exist.
And I should note to our listeners that when they read Dr. Cook's book, Canary in the Coal Mine, that they're going to really see how you innovated through this process of listening and also leading your staff to really do some new things that hadn't been done in healthcare before. Let's then talk about that third team of yours, the community network and beyond. In your book, you detail some individuals and organizations and how each became involved in crafting and delivering services that became part of the solution for Austin. We're focusing in our June-July 2021 issue of Faith and Fitness magazine on teamwork. So highlight how some of these different teams that aren't on your paid staff, aren't personal friends of yours, had a role in bringing change and care. Perhaps the family teams, different doctors and patient teams, extended teams, the whole wide range of players in your community and beyond.
Sure. So, first of all, we can view, other groups as competitors or collaborators. And I've always tried to approach it as, these are different groups, different businesses that I can collaborate with. And maybe I can't meet the needs of every single person that comes to me, but if I can connect them to other pieces that help round out their care, that builds trust in that individual. And they know that I'm not just there to get their money or to get their business, but I'm really there for them. And it has resulted in that being a relationship with other, maybe if I send a patient over to business X to round out the care that they need, business X appreciates that and sends patients back, to me or people back to me, and that person feels more cared for and recommends both business X and my business. And then we can really, work together to meet people's needs and be a part of a greater community, because that's ultimately what I think we all want, is we want to help people. We want to help people live healthier, and we want to see the community thrive and do well. And by collaborating with each other, we get a lot further than if we're just trying to compete with each other. And maybe there's strengths that one business has that another one doesn't, and they can kind of lean on each other through that. And then as far as the community goes, having advisors, in the community teach us what it is to live in that community is really valyable. So we have, people on staff with lived experiences. We have a couple people who were formerly using drugs, now in recovery, and they know that life in a way that I could never know. And then we partner with, people in the community with different lived experiences and have staff that kind of interact with them to hear, what is it like to live on the street? What is it like to be a single mom? What is it like to live with HIV? What is it like to inject drugs and just be totally consumed, by that? And by understanding that life more, then we're able to respond to that with services that may be able to help people, get beyond that
and start thriving.
Sure.
When you say you have people on staff that have lived experiences, can I understand that to be that at one point they were clients and now they've gotten, not only overcome their challenges, but have gotten training so that they can serve others?
Yeah, that's exactly right.
All right. And so if you would, to me, that just screams, the model of church that Christ created and a model that can be applied in our, gyms where people go to exercise, where trainers are training people, or certainly in the church where we tend to often see, the leadership is the leadership and the sheep are the sheep. Can you talk a little bit about how you found that to be a really, just what Christ designed?
Sure. He left heaven. He didn't see being God, you know, something that he had to hold on to, but he was willing to leave that and walk among us and, you know, really experience what it is to be human and build relationships with other people and inspire others to do the same, to go out and to build relationships with other people and help them find that abundance of life that I think everyone wants. I would say, you know, fitness is one of the foundational pieces that we need in life in order to live that abundant life. And when I work with people, I draw kind of a bullseye, and I tell people that if they want to feel resiliency in their life and that they have the capacity to do things in their life, you have to start with that center circle, which is ourselves, and we have to eat right, sleep, take care of ourselves, work out, you know, get that fitness, that well-being first and foremost. That's really the center, and we all need that in order to be healthy for ourselves, but healthy for our families, healthy for our jobs, healthy for our communities. So it's not selfish to focus on fitness, to focus on nutrition. It's actually required in order for us to be able to give something of ourselves, to be resilient, to be able to come up against adversity in our lives and overcome it. So that inner circle is really key. And the second one is home, just having a healthy home. And the third one is a healthy community outside of that. And if we can build that in our lives and in the lives of our clients, then they're going to be able to be more resilient in their life, come up against adversity, overcome that easier, and have that abundance of life that we all want.
I'm speaking today with Dr. William Cook, who has a practice in Austin, Indiana, where he discovered when he first started it that there was both a huge HIV epidemic going on as well as drug use and just a whole lot of things. His book is titled Canary in the Coal Mine, and you should get it because you're going to read so many stories that are just, you really go into it deeply, Dr. Cook. I mean, you really, and I know you've changed names for privacy and things like that, but man, as I was reading these stories, I was like, wow, this is really getting down to helping people on a level that people don't typically think of. To do that, you got the state involved, you got counselors, you got community, you got a lot of different people involved. And I think that a lot of times people that are operating a fitness business or even a church don't immediately make the connections. They don't draw the lines and go, wow, here's an opportunity. So I'm curious, what opportunities and strategies do you feel gyms, fitness or recreational groups, and Christian communities could bring to their local areas in addressing and meeting needs?
I'm a huge advocate for peer workers, people, again, with those lived experiences that understand things in a way that we may not be able to understand them. In Scott County, one of the most important things that, and probably the thing that I'm the proudest of accomplishing in my career, is helping establish a recovery community organization out of the chaos that we had come up against, and having people who were a few years ago injecting drugs on the street now being trained peer counselors to be able to help people that are still injecting drugs on the street find that hope and opportunity to enter into recovery. And I think gyms and churches could do similar things. You know, find peers within their organization that could work with people on a level that we may never be able to reach, because maybe there's a single mom who's very busy. She's trying to, you know, keep her career going while taking care of the kids and all the responsibilities at home. You know, and having a peer network of single moms, you know, working, you know, together inside of the gym, you know, might be a model that really helps them find community and support, encouragement. there's a lot of tech resources that model things like off of a Facebook, where you can have, you know, a peer network within within the organization of people working together. You know, the same thing applies to dads or LGBTQ, you know, people who may come to the facility and want to work out and but maybe not feel that safety that they need. That having a network, you know, of people with lived experiences to be able to share with each other experiences, encourage each other, understand what it is to struggle with a certain area. Dietary, you know, concerns, you know, people with gluten allergies or, you know, vegan, vegetarians, you know, that's going to look different. Their nutrition is going to look different while they're trying to acquire the fitness that they need and be able to develop those peer groups within our clients that they can share with each other and encourage each other. Does so much more than we could ever do for them without, you know, really understanding what it is to live their life, their
sure.
story.
Dr. Cook, as you think, if you can visualize yourself talking with a gym owner, a fitness director, or a pastor of a church, what would be some tips that you would give them to develop these peer-led groups? How do they... You know, how does a gym owner go out into people exercising and say, hey, you can do more than just be a member here. Here's an opportunity that we want to meet. Or a pastor, how can that pastor do more than just shake hands as people are walking out and, you know, everybody's saying that was a great sermon?
Yeah, I think the first part of it is just seeing your gym or your church as something more than your gym and your church. It's the people's gym and the people's church. And yeah, you have a particular worldview, a particular perspective on things, a particular story that you've brought with lived experiences, but that's different than probably most of the people that come to the gym or to the church. Their experiences are going to be very different than ours. So I think that's the first step is just, you know, coming to that acceptance that it's not our gym, our church, it's theirs, and we're resources for it, and it's bigger than ourselves. It can be bigger than ourselves if we submit ourselves to that, surrender ourselves to that. The second would be just to find champions that, you know, want to step up and help, you know, in those areas. I, as a married father, could not lead a peer group of single moms, right? But if there, you know, if there's a single mom that comes to the gym that's passionate about that and wants to be a champion for that, then I can connect her with the resources, provide her with the resources that she may need to help develop that peer network within the gym or within the church.
And let me ask you. You just gave an example there of a married dad realizing that you can't minister as effectively to single moms. How does the gym owner, the fitness director, or the church pastor start to discover those audiences out there, those people in need, that they don't know about? I mean, when you first started your practice, you didn't realize the whole drug use HIV situation, I don't think, right? That was a discovery you made.
It was a discovery that I made. Yeah, that is true. You know, first just by listening to people and looking for patterns, you know, recognizing that people aren't fitting within your experience. They have a different experience coming in, and we are doing them a disservice by trying to fit them within our experience. So it's, you know, setting our experience aside and being willing to enter into their story without any biases, expectations, prejudices, but just to really, you know, sit in their story and really understand it. I think that's part of it. The other part is, you know, holding conversations that don't have an agenda. Just having people come out and talk through issues. You know, what is it like to live in this community? You know, tell me about some of your struggles. What are the barriers in your life that you identify? What are the stumbling blocks in your life that you identify? And that could be, you know, through a community forum that you bring people together, break them up into round tables and just have discussions, you know, with some people that maybe quote, you know, resources at the table. And I view the people that come as the leaders, not the resource people at the tables or the person that's organized that those meetings. They're not the leaders. The people that come to the meeting, they're the leaders. And the people that are trying to find the resources and connect them with the services that they need, they're there to respond to the leaders.
That's so a really good point.
Yeah, setting it upside down, because we sometimes have the opposite in mind, that the teachers, the Sunday school teachers, the preacher, the fitness trainers, they're the leaders. And I think that's upside down. We got to flip it. And we have to see the people that come to us as the leaders, and we're responding to what they're leading us to do by giving them the resources they need.
Well,
oftentimes, they already know the
that.
Answers. Yeah,
let
go ahead.
Let me follow off of that with this next to the last question here. Appreciate your time, and I'm glad our listeners are digging into all of this. The person that's just working out at the gym, that's just attending the church and thinks, oh, they wouldn't want to hear from me, and I, you know, they're doing their own thing already. It's going really well. My passion that I think God has put in my heart, I should just try to figure that out myself. Can you give a little advice to the everyday gym goer or the everyday church goer or the person that just, you know, likes to do faith and fitness? Maybe they don't go to a gym or a church per se. What can they do to be obedient to the calling that God has put in their life and to find a way to network with people that have capacity,
yeah,
or potential capacity?
Sure. I think going back to, you know, something I said at the very beginning, we focus on our fitness to be able to live more abundantly in our lives. And so what does that look like for each person? It's going to look different. So I think it becomes a lot of introspection, a lot of quiet meditation with God, and, you know, talking with trusted advisors to just talk through what does that look like for our life to be abundant and meaningful and purposeful on earth. And in doing that, you know, we figure out what, you know, purpose and meaning looks like in our lives, and we use fitness to be able to pursue those things, you know, more fully. I would love for gyms and trainers and Sunday school teachers and pastors to, you know, reorient our perspective to that our job isn't to tell people how to live, but to help build the tools and resources for them to live more fully. Not thinking we have the answers, but that they have the answers oftentimes, not all the time, but oftentimes they're just not able to use those answers to get somewhere because there's obstacles in the way. And we can come along and help knock some of those obstacles out of the way to allow them to make those choices matter in their lives more. Sometimes they don't know, and sometimes just providing them a safe space to exist. Maybe they've been through a lot of trauma, and they don't have the capacity to give out so much. They just need to kind of sit somewhere and heal. And our gyms and churches can be safe spaces for them as well.
My final question, I hope will actually take us to a future interview, and that is, at some point as you were doing your, or as you're doing now, your business, your healthcare service in Austin, Indiana, have you had the sort of God moment, the revelation of, wow, this is so much bigger than I ever thought it could be. It was so much bigger than me. And if so, can you describe the conversation that God had with you in that moment?
It's really, I think, a community conversation that God is having with us in general. And I can think of many moments where we've had, I don't know, a community walk to raise awareness for something and gone to it. And being overwhelmed by the diversity and the number of people that have shown up to those events. When I first came to Austin, it really felt like a depressed area that didn't have any hope or energy at all. And now I go to some of these events and there's just a lot of energy, this passion that can be felt when you go there. And I'm just one person, you know, walking in this crowd, and it feels like something much bigger than myself, than I could have done by myself, you know, bigger than each of the individuals there. It's really a whole community. And I think we have these communities all across America that are kind of concentrated pockets. They feel alone and isolated, and we have a lot of division among those different communities, and distrust and unwillingness to work together. And something has to change there, and people have to be willing to get outside of that comfort level a little bit and start having conversations with other people that may look, act, believe differently than us, and find at the end of the day that they're just another person trying to get by another day, just like us. And none of us, you know, get through this life without having some amount of heartache and trouble. And if we can connect with each other there and understand each other a little bit more, and then start trying to build resources towards each other that we can all live in a bigger, bolder, more beautiful community, I think there's a lot of opportunity there for that excitement to be all across the community, and people to start living healthier, wealthier, and have that sense of purpose and meaning in their lives that they may not have before.
I've been speaking today with Dr. William Cook, the Tyndall Momentum author of Canary in the Coal Mine. And he's been sharing about his practice in Austin, Indiana, and how that has really helped him to be able to be a listener and to impact the lives of his community. Dr. Cook, thank you for your time today.
No problem. Thank you.
Be listening for more Faith and Fitness Magazine interviews that help you to live powerful, healthy, and passionate. Until next time, this is Brad Bloom.